You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what episode this is. This is going to be like 995 or 996 or something like that. We are knocking on 1,000 episodes of the Nine Finger Chronicles. So I don't want to sit here and like puff your ego here, Troy, but being in this little 10 lead up to episode 1,000, dude, that's pretty badass.
I was super excited, man. I've been pumped about it since you asked me last week. I was like, dude, he's getting close to 1,000. I was reading him. I'm like, man, I hope I'm not 999 or something like that. Definitely honored to be here, and a big congratulations to you, man. That's a huge milestone. The years, hours of dedication to it. As a listener and a fan, kudos to you and keep going. I think you have a great following, good listening, and a lot of people I hunt with, a lot of friends listen to you. So just super excited for you, super happy for you, man. So
congratulations. Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Now this is, I like living in the law of averages, right? So when I first started podcasting, it took more than 2 hours to locate a guest. I mean, I'm adding this all up. Locate a guest, yep. Record the episode, come up with the writing, come up with the image, then launch it and upload it. Man, I can remember being there where sometimes uploading a video, or excuse me, an audio MP3 would take 30 minutes. Okay. At the very beginning. And now it's almost instant. Right. And so my guess is, and this is kind of a big guess, but in these 10 years that I have just the Nine Finger Chronicles, that I'm guessing somewhere between 2000 to 2,500 hours. I'm guessing closer to 2,500 hours of work to put out these 1,000 podcasts. So that's a lot of time when you think about it.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But they say do what you love, never work a day in your life.
So, exactly. Exactly.
However, there's been some days where I wanted to punch my fucking computer. I'll tell you that. Oh, right, yeah.
Well, I bet in the early days, if you get an older computer, 2-3 years old, you know, the speed's just slow on it. I bet that was even worse.
Oh, dude. So my first office was also in my, in the bedroom closet next to our house, or next to our room. The bedroom closet next to our room. So there would be times in the background upstairs where you could hear the kids crying, my wife yelling, the dog barking in first episodes of the Nine Finger Chronicles. And I can remember a couple guys like, you know why I like your podcast, buddy? Because in the background, when I hear those kids fighting and yelling and screaming and the dog barking, yeah. That's real. Like that's real life that everybody has to go through. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Definitely relatable. Definitely relatable.
Right. Right. All right, Troy. It's August here. I mean, it's like the last week of August here.
Yeah.
And we're getting ready to dominate this hunting season. Troy, why don't you talk to us a little bit about where you work, where you live, who you are, what you do, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, Troy Bohm. I work for GSM Outdoors. You know, they own quite a few hunting and fishing companies. You know, some of the big ones are Stealth Camp Muddy, Walker's Game Ear, Sog Knives. Then in the fishing side, you know, we got like Phoenix, Dobbins, Yamamoto. So it's awesome. I haven't even been here a year yet, but it's a great company, you know. Great products all around, just great people too.
Yeah.
You know, then they're big hunters and fishermen too. So it's, you know, getting to come to work every day and, you know, work hard, obviously, but, you know, still just relate with people, sharing buck, you know, especially this time of year, you know, we're sharing buck photos constantly, just, yeah. You know, getting amped up in the mornings. Like, what did you get last night? So that's cool. And I live in Michigan, Sparta, Michigan, little town, north of Grand Rapids. But yeah, man. September's almost here. You know, it's kind of like you look forward to the season. And, you know, for me, as you know, with, you know, family, kids, job, it's like time management is huge. And it's, you know, since we're already September, it's like, man, now I'm trying to figure out like, all right, well, I got to get out scouting a bunch more times. Like, how do I just make time to get out and scout here and there? And then, you know, how many times do I go scouting versus going, you know, holding those days to go hunting in October? So, but it's good. It's a great time of year, man. It's just like, I don't know if you get this, but especially now it's like, you know, you have kind of broader friend group, especially of hunters. And it's like, you know, you might not hear from people all spring, all summer. And then now it rolls around. It's like, you know, you get a random text from somebody you haven't talked to in a time of a buck picture. And it's like, awesome, man. It's like instantly you're right back into it. You know, it's, you don't get like the kind of cliche, like, hey man, it's been a long time. How you doing?
No, you just pick right back up.
Yeah. You know, there's no small talk. It's like, man, you got your bucks on camera. Like, you know, you got big plans this year, what you're doing. So that's awesome, man. Definitely excited. Yeah. Definitely excited for this year.
Yeah. I got a buddy, Ryan Iberg. If he's listening to this, I don't know if he listens a lot or not, but we spent a lot of time in a tree stand back in the day when he would film me. And then there was a season where I filmed him, and then he would come then he came and hunted Iowa one year on my nice. Farm. And, I filmed him for a little bit and that kind of stuff. But, we have one of those relationships where we don't talk a lot, but now right, he's getting ready to go on an elk hunt. So we'll chat a little bit. And then when I go on my mule deer hunt, we'll chat a little bit. And then deer season, we'll chat a little bit. And then after that, it's like quiet for 8 months and then back to it right away again. Yo. So
yeah,
it's cool, man.
No, that's great. Yeah. So I like that. Enjoy that a lot.
Actually, the podcast that is going to air, I believe 994 maybe, that's gonna be, I don't know, let me check here, podcast, I'll tell you exactly where we're at right here. 900 and this will be 995. Okay.
Nice.
And the one that launched before this one was with Chris Duncan, so I'm sure you've met Chris.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Chris, so great guy.
I've known Chris for a long time. He's also a GSM guy. I've known him for, back in the Trophy Pursuit days when we were crushing that trade show circuit and doing all that kind of stuff. And that was fun.
Cool. Yeah. Chris, great guy. I mean, he's a legend, you know. Everybody knows him, like, just a super nice guy too. Like, absolutely. You know, super smart. He shot a freaking tank last year too. I think it was like a 9 year old deer, seven or nine. I don't know. A super old deer last year he got.
Yeah. He's one of those guys that finds them and kills them. Right.
So, yeah. Oh yeah.
Michigan, dude, you live north of Grand Rapids or north of Grand Haven?
North of Grand Rapids.
Rapids. Okay. All right.
Yep.
You got a farm up there that you hunt, public land?
I do a little both. Yeah. I have my grandpa has a farm, not huge. It's like probably 30 acres, you know, it's a cattle farm. So it's, I'm trying to find the deer and they're trying to figure out where to eat because the cows just eat everything. So that's a challenge. But, you know, got a couple of private spots that I hunt. Actually picked up a lease this year, 150 acre lease, which is like, It's kind of tricky, you know. It's like, it's probably like an hour and 15 away from my house, which adds another layer, but it's like, you know, I don't know how it is if it's the same in Iowa, but, you know, trying to find leasing land to lease, like, mm-hmm. you know, at like a large plots like that, just difficult. So, you know, I was like, man, I got to jump on it. So, we're still kind of working on finalizing that. So, hopefully I can get that locked in and, you know, I figure if I hit it like 4 or 5 times a year, it's going to be worth it just because it's so hard to get. So it's hard to get, you know, quality land, but I mean, people have it, and even public land, like, you know, I do hunt public land a lot. I got some friends, who I started hunting with probably like the last 3 to 4 years, who are big public land hunters. And it's good, you know, you can still get some quality deer out there. I like it, 'cause it's like, you know, I've been hunting, you know, that 25 acres and a couple are like smaller 17 acres for, I don't know, you know, 25, 30 years now. And it's like, it's just so cool to get out and experience, you know, new property.
100%.
Just scout, get out there, like, 100%. you know hammering through swamps in the spring is like fun, you know. It's like one of my favorite things to do, just grab some, we all, me and my buddies will just go out and like, hey, this swamp looks thick as shit, like, cool, let's go walk through it, you know. So that's a great time, but yeah, I love hunting in Michigan, you know. I mean, so, you know, it's obviously we don't have the quality of deer and size as other states, but, you know,
it don't matter,
still rewarding,
man.
No does not matter,
doesn't matter.
Nope, not at all.
I've just realized, and I've beat this horse to death, right? I mean, I'm so happy at my age to just get away and go sit in a tree stand, dude.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I care about is just this removal from the real world and getting into a tree stand and enjoying the moment that it's deer. Not like a big buck, but a deer. Like, I even love the river bottom farms that I hunt where there's no cell service. And dude, it's crazy how conditioned we are to pick up our phones. And when you don't have that service and you can't do anything, you're just like, now what? Oh, I have to go back to what I used to do and just observe and look at nature. And that's like it's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, you know, I'll go sit sometimes, and I'll sit, you know, a couple, 2-3 times in a row and maybe not even see a deer, you know, come home. I was like, yeah, do you see anything? He's like, no. He's like, oh, that sucks. Like, not really. I'm like, it was awesome. They're like, yeah. So you get up at 4:35 in the morning to just go sit and not see anything. I was, yes, it is awesome.
Yeah.
How old are you, Dan?
I'm 44. I turned 45 44. In November.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, so I'm 38 and I kind of feel like mid 30s, even early 30s, I started, and maybe it was kids, you know, I got a 4 and a 2 year old. So I don't know if it's like kids, but man, like the appreciation of just getting out there has like, it's just started kicking in now. And it's just, it's awesome because it's just like, I feel like I get more amped up for the season. 'Cause it's like, you know, I'm at a stage where I'm, you know, if I shoot a 110, 112, I got pumped, you know, like I'll take that every year, you know. It's awesome for me. And so I'm kind of like in, like, I don't know. I hope it's like my glory days of hunting where it's just like, it's great, but I feel like it's just continues, you know, talk to guys like you that are a little bit older and, you know, even my dad and other people that are like, they just have like a greater appreciation for just getting out there and hunting. And, you know, like you said, sometimes I don't even take my phone, like just
100%,
just leave it back in the truck and go out there. And you're just, you know, you're just out there in nature and it's awesome.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to finish this thought on the glory days that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm getting ready. There's been two glory days. Like, there's the independent me, myself, me hunting by myself, doing whatever I want glory days before I was married. And I was hunting like 30, 40 mm-hmm. days a year. I was doing whatever I wanted. I could, you know, it was just awesome. The encounters that I had in that time frame, the amount of deer that I saw in that time frame, what I learned in that time frame, I look at that as the glory days for me.
Yeah.
The second part mm-hmm. is like a return to the glory days where now, see, my parents didn't hunt. So I had to do a lot of that by myself. Yep. It, with no friends, like no, I really wasn't a part of any deer camps or anything like that.
Yep.
But now I'm excited as my two older kids are starting to get more involved in the outdoors where I am kind of, dude, I'm kind of thinking that there's going to be a second glory days coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah. That what, how old are your kids? Cause what if you start hunting like 12, 14 maybe?
Yeah. 12 is my oldest, then 10, and then 7. He's getting ready to turn 8. So
yeah, I'm excited for that too. I feel like that's just gonna be a whole new level of like enjoyment and excitement to just to watch them hunt with them. That'll be a great time for sure.
Yeah. All right, before we get into the rest of this episode, I want to say a huge thank you to the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. So just do me a huge favor. Go and visit these guys' websites. Take advantage of the discount codes if they have any. At least just go to the website and take a look at the products that I use, the products that I mention here. And that's how I pay my bills. So first, right out of the gate, a company that has been here almost since the beginning is Wasp Archery. Wasp offers a complete lineup of mechanical and fixed blade broadheads. I've used the jackhammer. I was looking at my wall the other day and just kind of my wall of all the bucks that I've shot. Mm-hmm. And there's only been one buck out of my 13, I believe it is, that I did not shoot with a Wasp three blade jackhammer. All of them have been, that head is made in the United States of America. And that to me means something. So if you guys want to go check out the broadhead that I've used for almost all but one, maybe 2 years of my hunting career, go visit wasparchery.com. Enter the discount code NFC20 at checkout for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. These guys have they have a huge lineup of optics, but they have spotting scopes, binoculars, range finders, rifle scopes, red dots, and apparel line sunglasses. I mean, these guys are doing it and doing it big. Their new product, the Ranger HD3000, is a range finding binocular that they just came out with here in early August. I've had an opportunity to mess around with it now. It is badass. It's going to make me more efficient on my spot and stocks, and I'm looking forward to using it in the field this fall. VortexOptics.com. Next on the list, Code Blue Sense. Troy, do you mess around with mock scrapes at all?
I just started.
Dude.
Probably the last like 2 to 3 years or so, just started getting some mock scrapes, especially because I started having a couple more scrapes closer. But yeah, definitely started playing around with them, and they work.
Yeah, dude, I'm a huge fan of mock scrapes.
Yeah.
If anything, just to pair them with a trail camera and get a little bit of inventory as they come in to check it out. But go to Code Blue Sense, mm-hmm. check out their full lineup of real and synthetic deer urine. Check out their Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit. That's the with the Rack Rub pre-orbital gel. That's what I've That's what I did this last week. That's what I'm going to be freshening up my scrapes with throughout the season. That's a badass product. And then they also have scent elimination products like deodorant, laundry detergent, sprays, shampoos, things like that. CodeBlueScents.com. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Go check that out. And then last, or two more products. I always forget my own company, but Reveal Trail Cameras. Ease of use is badass. Scan a QR code, put batteries in the camera, connect it to the app. And I think I timed it this weekend. I set one camera up in under 4 minutes, I believe. It was like 4 minutes, under 5 minutes, one camera, 5 minutes, scan the QR code. That included putting the batteries in, setting it up, and getting my first picture sent to my phone. So I like to test everything before I put it out, and it works very well. Their new camera, the Ultra, is their brand new camera. Go to tacticam.com/cameras, read up on all the functionality of that camera and their older 3.0 versions that are spectacular cameras. So go take a look at those. Next on the list is, and lastly, it's my company, and that is fullsneakgear.com. Just a bunch of t-shirts, a couple sweatshirts. We got stocking caps. That's what I have a lot of inventory right now in the stocking cap. So if anybody is interested in buying a stocking cap for this upcoming season, I got blaze orange and I got green. So one for bow hunting and one for gun hunting. Go pick those up. And make me happy. So then that money goes into my pocket so I can afford to go on out-of-state trips and put gas in my tank and maybe even take my wife out for dinner before I leave for a week with her and the kids. So go fullsneakgear.com. Troy, are you ready to BS about shooting something?
Oh, yeah, baby.
All right. All right, Michigan. Tell me a little bit about the area that you hunt in Michigan, what it's like pressure wise, any public, like describe the vibe of this area that you hunt to me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's definitely pressure. There's kind of like my main spot at my grandpa's farm. It's like the cows, they throw a whole different ball game, and it's kind of funny. Like I've heard before, people are like, oh yeah, deer aren't afraid of cows, but like, man, after hunting a farm for 20 years, like they do. I mean, they eat all the food, so there's not really many places for their bedding because they're trampling anywhere. But then hunting there so many times, like if I have cows coming down like anywhere in the vicinity of where I'm hunting, like the deer are just don't come around. And I got a pond on like the north side too. So I'm kind of like pinched off there. But in the recent years, my grandpa's getting a little bit older. And so, I mean, probably 25 acre farm, bunch of old apple trees there. Like it's killer property, those big bucks all around, tons of deer. And kind of his numbers have dwindled down in the last like 2 years or so. Now he might have like, maybe 13, 10 cattle now. And like, it's noticeable the amount of deer that I'm getting on camera this year versus recent years. And then there's different sections of the property. Actually, like last year, I finally went and knocked on the neighbor's door. It's like, hey, can you mind if we hunt over here? Like, I've been hunting behind your property for you. He's like, yeah, have at it. So kind of open up a new spot. And it's kind of funny, like you hunt these areas and you're kind of restricted to this 25 acres, and you're like, man, there's just nothing around here. I don't see anything. The only thing game is like you branch outside. Like, I mean, we're talking 200 yards in a different area, and it is just freaking loaded. Like, yeah, there's just deer everywhere. And so that's been nice, and I think too, and I know you've mentioned this, you talk about a lot of kind of like the culture change of hunting. For the longest time I've hunted, I'd shoot anything that I could see or get. I wasn't chasing antlers or trying to shoot big deer. And that kind of changed, I'd say, over the last 5 years. Started just being more, selective and trying to get a higher quality deer and, not shooting much of doe, even though I do try to take at least one or two doe every year. And it is crazy at how, like, the quality of deer that I see now versus what I used to, and just the sheer volume And again, I, you know, it's hard to say whether it's like specifically like me and the people that I hunt there with of how we've changed, but like that to me, it's noticeable. And I, you know, yeah. I can't point to anything else other than like the deer we've been taking has led to an increase in like quality. I mean, I've had more, you know, I've had huge deer on camera this year and last year, where in the past that might be like one or two sporadically. So that's been nice. And I think, you know, a lot of people around are, you know, kind of being more selective with that. So that's cool, but it's like, you know, the difference is huge. And then public land, you know, I do a little bit of that. You know, we also, I'll go up north kind of for buck camp every year. It's kind of funny, you know, I have like pretty good private land, and yet I still go, you know, opening day up with a bunch of buddies and hunt public land for a week straight. But it's awesome. Yeah. You know, we have a great time again, exploring new territory, you know, and that it does get a little bit crowded. Like you find people, but again, you can, you know, you can find pockets almost everywhere where there's lower pressure, a good amount of deer. And it's like anything, you know, you got to kind of put the time in and effort into going and exploring, but you also have to have the knowledge of, you know, how to scout and do that. And I think that's yeah. why, you know, like podcasts like yours and other people who are kind of, you know, teaching people how to hunt public and or even private is huge. And I think it just does a lot for hunters everywhere. So you know, that's kind of where I'm at. And so yeah. this year it's, you know, it's a lot of like time management. That's why, you know, like I mean, I obviously run a lot of cameras because it's I have, you know, maybe four different private lands. And so for me it's like if I get like, okay, cool, I have like 2 days this week that I can go out. They help me see like, okay, where I might have a better chance. And obviously for me, you know, wind also just plays a huge factor in that of when you, especially on private, if you only have, you know, 6-8 spots that you can sit, you know, you know, you gotta, depending on the wind, there might only be two that you can even potentially even go to. So like that helps out a ton, but that's kind of where I'm at, you know, just trying to time management and figure out, you know, kind of get an inventory of where the deer are at this year. And then just excited to get out there.
Yeah. So, you mentioned this cattle deal, man. Yeah. I'll tell you this, cattle suck if you have to live in an environment with cattle, but I yeah. will say this, cattle and deer do not mix. I don't ever see a deer walking through a pasture that has cattle in it, but I do see deer walking through a horse, like intermingling with horses at two, yep. like, and I'm talking like 10, 15 yards type that close, right? They don't do that with cattle from what I've seen, mm-hmm. but here's what cattle do that a lot of people probably overlook. And that is the presence of cattle creates pinch points and they push deer into certain areas because those deer don't want to come in and mix with the cattle. They, mm-hmm. And so I have one spot in particular where they have introduced cattle, into the, about the October timeframe into this property. Well, the horses go in the woods. The cattle really don't go into the woods. They may use the shade, but they stay in the pasture mm-hmm. side of it. And so I said, oh my God, this just ruins everything. It just ruins it. Now these cattle are in here. Well, what I did was I set up a trail camera on this deer trail just inside the timber. And that trail gets used every day now. Every single day, deer are yeah. coming back and forth on it. And it's created this avenue where they jump the fence to go on the neighbor's property for like a destination food source, like into yep. an ag field. And I have learned to hunt that now.
Yeah.
And so I am looking forward to, like, it's almost like a cheat code. Stop bitching about the cattle, but use them to your advantage, mm-hmm. man.
Yeah. So. And what you just described is, so I told you I moved to like the far edge of the property. Mm-hmm. What you described makes total sense because the volume of deer I see over there. And then when I went to the neighbor's property, it's kind of like up on this ridge that it makes total sense that the cows are just pushing those deer over there. So if they're moving, if they're coming to the north at all, which is common because if they have a good food source to the south and they're kind of bedding off to the east, it makes total sense that they're pinching over there. And that's where, I mean, that's where I shot a nice buck last year. That's where we've seen a majority of the deer going through. And that's, and like, that's exactly what I'm doing without realizing that, oh, yeah. that they're just traveling because the cows are pushing them out in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah, man. But I've never hunted on other than just cattle and horses. That's all my experience is. I've never hunted in a big hog field, I guess, or sheep or anything like that. I'm sure they react different to those as well. But, you mentioned, this culture shifting where do you feel like the Michigan culture is shifting to less of a it's brown, it's down, and more to a let's hold out on these 1 and 2 year olds and maybe try to shoot something a little bigger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think, you know, within my network, you know, that's definitely what I'm seeing. And, you know, a lot of it's too, I think it's a generational thing, you know, because it's like, you know, growing up, my dad obviously taught me how to hunt and everything. And that was his mentality. That was, you know, especially like my uncles and like that's just what they did. You know, that's just how it was. And I think, you know, now that obviously they're getting older and, you know, I'll say more guys our age, you know, are coming into the picture with, you know, access to more information, which I think is a huge thing because it's like
this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You know, you hear these guys talking about it, you can just have more, you know, you jump on your phone and watch any hunting video you want. I think as they're kind of, you know, educating themselves, especially, you know, whether they call it deer ecology or like they know that it's deer ecology or not, like they're kind of seeing that and hearing it. And I think it's just kind of breeding people to think about things differently. That's helping to lead to it. And I think it's a good thing. You know, I mean, you know, deer population, you know, it seems to be improving, at least from what I can tell within the area I hunt. So, I think it's good. And I like, to me anyways, too, you'll kind of talk about like that reward of hunting. You know, I call this kind of my glory. It's like, to me, it's way more rewarding because I'm not just going out like, you know, trying to see the first year. And that, not that it was bad, but I remember hunting, you know, it's like you see a doe and you shot, like I was stoked, like it was awesome. But now just to be able to watch and observe different deer moving through and kind of seeing how they act, what they do, like that's awesome. And so, you know, I think it's all a good thing. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm seeing here.
Yeah. Do you live in an APR county?
No.
No. Okay. All right. Nope. I was just kind of curious because, you know, there's guys in Michigan who have, they live in those APR counties. Mm-hmm. Man, you want to talk about hearing a ton of people bitch and complain when they couldn't shoot four corns anymore or when they had to change that stuff. And then eat their own words once they see that, oh my God, this is working. Yep. And the, you know, the sex ratio is evening out a little bit. The antlers are getting bigger, which makes everybody happy. Right. And so
close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's counties I hunt in that have that, you know, and it's obviously different and you adjust to it. But yeah, even that, I mean, you can kind of see it. Like I talk about, we go up north, on public for deer camp and, you know, the guys I go with, they were, you know, they've gone for a long time. And I feel like even in the last, I can't remember when they changed that in the county we hunt in, but like, it was definitely a while ago. We shoot a nice buck every year up there off public land. And, you know, I think it's because of that. So, I think it definitely helps out.
Yeah. How many years ago has it been since Michigan outlawed baiting?
Oh man, I want to say it was like, don't quote me, but probably around like 18, maybe. I want to say it was like before 2020. It could even be before that, but it's been quite a while now.
It's quite like, a while. Yeah. What's the vibe about baiting? Because when they did that, that also ruffled a lot of feathers,
yeah.
And dudes were like, "Screw this! I'm still gonna bait." Like nobody can change my mind. And you'd run out to you'd go out to a farm and you'd run out to bait piles, and mm-hmm. you know, guys would say, "Oh, well, it's outlawed, but people are still doing it, right?" Has that changed at all? That sentiment changed?
You know, you have groups of hunters that are still for it. They still bait. They're still going to do it. You know, they try to get away with it in different forms. But then you have guys that are like, you know, and I think the guys that are like, "I don't bait. I don't need to bait. I would never do that anyways, even if it was legal." They're kind of more of like the bow hunter chasing a big buck or a mature buck. And they're kind of more dedicated to, you know, the quality of the deer versus just going out and shooting a, you know, an 8-point or like a, you know, a 3-year-old buck. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of mixed, like it, you know, especially from just different people I know. I have guys that are like, even if it was legal now, they wouldn't bait. You know, they're like, yeah. I'm after the mature buck. I don't want to bait. I'm gonna read trails, you know, kind of use more of the woodsmanship to hunt. And then you have other guys that are like, they're still baiting. You know,
yeah.
So I think it's just a mixed bag. And I kind of see that in different areas of the state. So I don't know that there's like a general consent. I think the majority of folks would probably want to bait, or they would bait if it was legal. Mm-hmm. You know, cause you kind of look at like people who are, you know, don't have all of the time to just go hunt constantly or dedicated to it. So it's like, you know, throw a bait pile out there and it's like, "Hey, I got a shell camera on and I know when these deer are coming in. If I have one day a week that I can hunt, my odds of success are going way up. So I'm going to go take advantage of that and do it." So I think there, you know, I definitely see it. It was kind of funny you mentioned that though, like you drive anywhere outside of the cities, especially get into like northern Michigan. It's like, dude, every gas station has deer corn for sale. It's like, it's illegal, yet you literally can get it everywhere.
Right.
So it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, if you've ever talked to certain companies, right, they just say things like, "Oh, it's, we also make our deer marketed product for people who just want to watch deer in their backyards," right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. "Grow bigger bucks." But yeah, those right. are, those products are for everybody, not just serious yeah. hunters. Right. So
yeah, they're feeding the rabbits and the squirrels is what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, and dude, I even had a guy on one of my podcasts, this was several years ago, who worked for a mineral and a mineral company. This was a long time ago, where we were doing an interview, and he said in the interview, "Yeah, we make this mineral this color so Johnny Law will have a harder time finding it." And yeah. I'm like, okay. Okay. Now, it doesn't matter if you use that product in a bait state, right? But if you're not allowed to use mineral or bait in your state, well, that's an issue,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So it's like, so that tells you that some of these companies, they just don't care, right?
Yeah.
It's on us to make the right decision, right?
Yeah. So 100%. Yeah. They'll make it. Whoever wants to buy it, they'll sell it and they'll adjust it because they know that they'll still sell it in those states. So.
Yeah. And if it wasn't sold at Farm King or, you know, Tyson's, it'd be sold, you know, guys are going to the co-op to get it. And the guys at the co-op don't give a shit. They're going to sell a bag of 100%. Corn to whoever wants to buy a bag of corn.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, 100%.
Yeah. That whole baiting issue is something that I always have this internal struggle with. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have been in environments where there's ag everywhere and, there's cover. There's, you know, the typical Iowa thing. And I've run into out in the woods. This was several years ago. I left a note on some dude's tree stand that said, "Baiting is illegal. And, I don't want you to bait because if you bait, then I could get in trouble because of your bait pile.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And some people would look at that and go, just leave that guy alone, whatever. Blah, blah. I'm the guy who likes to follow the law.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is where it gets weird. Like, what's his name? Who's that rock and roll singer, lives in Michigan? Uncle Ted, right?
Uncle Ted, yeah.
Right. He's like, yep. He's that guy who's like, if I want to dump 1,000 pounds of corn on my property to hunt deer, no government should be able to tell me what I can and can't do on my own property.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Yep. That's cool. I can kind of see that point of view. But at the same time, I'm trying to figure out, like, I have this internal debate because I also went to Kansas last year. And although I didn't kill my buck over a bait pile, I hunted over bags of acorns, over, you know, freshly dumped corn, things mm-hmm. like that. Cause in Kansas that's legal.
Yep.
And so I was sitting here asking myself, like, am I a hypocrite for doing this? Am I like, it's mm-hmm. just a weird dynamic when you start to throw in the whole food plot scenario, because
yeah.
food plots are almost the same thing. It's just that they're in the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah. They're growing. They're not.
Yeah. So I don't know, still. Man.
Yeah. It's tough. And I mean, when it was legal, I remember as a kid baiting all the time, and that, yep. you know, we'd have a bait pile in the back and we'd, you know, go out there and hunt on it all the time. And it was great. And it's not like I'm definitely not against it, because again, I see the benefit for guys that, you know, use it. And especially, you know, if you take kids out or something like that, it's like, hey, go on the bait pile, you're going to increase the chances of them seeing a deer, hopefully get them to, you know, want to hunt more and keep them interested.
Right.
But it's definitely conflicting when you start to think about, like, you know, baiting, especially depending on the property you're hunting. If you're hunting, like, you know, next to somebody else who's baiting heavily, and you're maybe hunting kind of like thicker woods or something like that, you don't want to bait, you know, it's, what do you do? Cause it's like, well, the deer are going to go that way and you're here.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's almost like you're competing, you know, you're trying to compete with them, you know, and they have an upper hand because they're baiting and you're not.
Yeah. That's where it kind of gets weird. Right.
And
I don't know, like I have always been that guy from a rules and regulation standpoint that is like, I used to think, this is the way it should be done. You shouldn't do that, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And now, like, I'm just living in this, dude, do what you want.
Yep.
Like, just stay away from me. that's a weird vibe, but that's yep. what I've kind of been living in recently. Mm-hmm. It's just, you go do whatever you want over there. Yeah. I'll stay right here.
Yeah. And you're probably, I mean, especially with you, with how many people you talk to and just know, yeah. I mean, everybody has a different output, thought process, ways 100%. Of doing things. You're not going to change their mind, because just like they're not going to change yours. So it's like, yeah, you know, you just kind of got to deal with it and, you know, hunt your hunt.
Yeah.
And be happy with it.
Yeah. And I don't know about you. Have you been in the hunting industry for long? I know you've only been working here for about a year.
About a year. No, I haven't actually. So before this, I was in medical device manufacturing.
Okay.
Yeah, big global medical device manufacturer. Just wasn't for me. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's cool. It's cool, you know, well, again, I got to get, you know, I want to get into hunting and fishing. So I made a conscious decision to get into the hunting space. I actually started off at Huntwise, was there for about a year. Yep. So yeah, they're actually based in Grand Rapids.
And the reason I asked that question is because, and maybe it's just, it's crazy how many people will actually, during a conversation, will actually admit to breaking the law when they go hunting. Like,
yeah.
I've had guys at trade shows come up to me and it's like, here's the buck I shot this year. And then they'd be like, I'm over bait. You know, like, I put a little bit of corn out, or I hopped on the neighbor's, you know, across the fence and hunted on the,
insane.
Like, I just go, what are you, like, why are you admitting to this to me? Keep it to yourself. Yeah. Like, I don't want to know about that shit.
Yeah. Oh, it's weird. I see it all the time too, especially, you know, I was mentioning, you know, that there's just bait on the sides of the road everywhere, especially it'll come like September in October. It's like, you see a guy, you know, pull up in a truck, just full decked out camo, you know, the Browning sticker on the back, loading his truck up full deer. It's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh yeah, man, I bait over here. It's like, you probably shouldn't be saying that.
Yeah, like, don't tell me. If I'm not baiting on my property and you are baiting on your property, I'm going to call the sheriff or the DNR and tell them that you're baiting because you're taking away from my hunting. Right. Yeah, like, 100%. I don't get that at all. So
no, I think they like they're cool or something. Like, it's still cool to break the law. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. The bad boys of hunting. I always thought this would be a very interesting YouTube channel. Would be that I don't want to take responsibility if somebody does this, but the like someone puts a mask on and dresses up in all camo and it's the shed poacher.
And oh, yeah.
All they do is just go look for sheds on other people's properties. Like some of the bigger names on the industry and trying to dodge cell cameras and stuff like that. Yep. That would be, you know, like whenever they have those documentaries about the Guatemalan drug trade or like the Colombian drug trade and everybody's in sunglasses, covered their face.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how the guy would do all of his conversations.
Oh, yeah. Talking in a deep voice.
Well, yeah. In a computer altered voice.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That would be crazy.
That would be crazy. Especially if people would share like when they catch him on camera.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You could have all that. So it's like you see where he's at when he gets caught. Like how
it's kind of like where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
That's a good one.
So, yeah. Where else are you going this year, man, other than Michigan?
That's it. I don't have any out of state hunts. I actually, you know, I just started drawing points in Iowa, actually, because some of my you know, I have my group of friends, you know, some of them are, they travel out of state. You know, I've been to Canada bear hunting. I've been elk hunting out west once. Elk hunting, I tell you what, man, went and just lived in the mountains for like a week with my buddy who's a guide up in Alaska. We just went straight public land. Like, you know, we're going to kill it. This is awesome. We get out there, saw maybe like 7 elk the whole time that were like 2 miles away and had the best week of hunting of my life, you know, especially being a Midwestern guy, been in the mountains here and there, but never like, you know, just stayed in them. And man, that was awesome. So, you know, and luckily I did that before my kids were born, like the year before my daughter was born. So I got that. Now I think when they get a little bit older, I have more time, I'll definitely try to get back out there. But yeah, no out of state hunts, probably, you know, in the next couple of years, I think, hopefully can get out to Iowa. You know, I have some other people that, go down to Illinois, Ohio here and there, you know, might try to sneak down there for a week and hunt some public, but just kind of staying local.
Yeah. And sometimes you need that. I told myself after last year going to South Dakota and Kansas and hunting a week in Iowa, I was like, you know what? I'm going to chill in Iowa this year. Wrong.
Yep.
Like once my buddy texts me, he's like, so are we doing this year again?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, well, I wasn't going to, but
yes,
since you asked. Yeah. How many hunts you got planned this year then?
I just have two right now. You know, obviously Iowa. And then, so I got invited on an elk hunt. I had to turn down. I got invited on an early season. That would have been next week, an early season whitetail hunt in Nebraska that I turned down because I'm coaching two football teams. This fall.
Dang. So you're ramping up.
Yeah. So the only thing that happens, that would happen, that would change this, would be if I tag out early in Iowa and I tag out early in South Dakota, then what would happen is I would maybe find someplace to hunt, like public land in Wisconsin or some over the count, maybe Missouri, public land, northern Missouri or things like that and do that if I tag out early. If I don't tag out in South Dakota, but I tag out in Iowa early, well, I might hop back in the truck and drive back to South Dakota and try to knock down a mule deer somewhere, somehow, you know, over there. And what's cool about what I like to do is I stop and I talk to everybody, right? Like anybody I see, you walk up to them. Hey, how you doing? See, some people, they don't have the time of day for you. Others will give you your telephone number. And I've generated across Nebraska, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri, these connections with people where I might not be able to hunt their property, but I could, if I wanted to, pull my truck right up against their barn and sleep in my truck.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? Things like that. Or hey, dude, can I hang a deer here for a night? Oh, yeah. You know, come do it. You know, whatever. Like those types of relationships are pretty badass. Yeah. Like the first year, the first animal I ever shot in South Dakota, I kind of have made friends with this ranch hand. And I shot my buck. He went into a river and died. I had to jump in and then I had to drag him out of the river and up onto some land. And he came down with his side by side, packed it up for me. So that's walk in that I couldn't drive my vehicle on because it's the rancher. He could. And so he came down, he put my deer in there. He drove off with it and, took it back to the truck.
Yeah.
And I was gung ho about all that. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. It was badass. Yeah.
It's great to have those connections and it probably just helps you out. It gives you that flexibility. You know, like you said, like, oh, cool. I'm heading here. Call them up.
Yeah.
Get out there.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Do you have, so when you go to these other spots, public land, are these areas that you like scouted for years and you kind of know the lay of the land a little bit? Or do you like make a conscious effort to go scout them each year in different areas to figure out like if you have an opening to go hit those, you go? Or is it just kind of over the years you've accumulated all of that knowledge about different sections of public land in different states?
Yeah. So I wish I could show you my Nebraska, South Dakota, Iowa, maybe after the call, I'll show you, but it's just the amount of pins that I have collected over the last 6-7 years in these states.
Yep.
It's crazy, right? So there's two things here. One, I have learned on an out-of-state hunt, don't ever leave deer to find deer. And what I mean by that is, and that's for my goal. My goal is to shoot, to fill my tag basically with a legal buck, right? That's what I want. And so I'm not leaving deer to go and try and find other deer, right? It doesn't make sense. Now, I know guys who are looking for a specific inch or age class who might be, there's nothing here that I like. I'm going to go over to the next area and try that. So what I do is I'll go to a spot. I'll look for the deer. If I feel the deer are killable or if there's no deer there, then I'll move to the next spot and the next spot and the next spot. And I'll cycle through it that way. But if there's a good number of deer and I'm seeing what matches my expectation for that hunt, I'm not leaving anymore.
Yeah.
Right. So I have all these pins that are great backup points. So if I ever find myself in these areas, maybe 15 years from now, I can go, oh my God, I got this, I got this spot here. We can go check on.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's super handy. Yeah. Those hunting apps, man, they are, especially for legit. Like public land hunting. It's
the, you take those away,
information they hold.
I feel like this is going to sound crazy, but taking away the mapping devices these days would be similar to like taking away a guy's bow. Like imagine what you would have to do in order to find good hunting land or what you had to do. My first Western hunts didn't have Onyx. I didn't download it
out there.
I just went and I got a map from the landowner. And it was a giant map. I mean, it was like 4 foot wide and it came in a roll. And he had highlighted with a highlighting marker. He had it. And he's like, just bring these back to me because that's all I have. Dang. And so I had to unroll it on the hood of my truck, read what it was, then roll it back up, put the rubber band around it and put it in there. And I was at some points guessing where I was at.
I bet.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty wild. There used to be, and I had a great conversation with a guy from Onyx a while ago, and he was like, dude, at some point there was some leniency, right? If you were over a fence line into another area and you got caught, a landowner would be like, nope, dude, that was my fence line. You need to get out of here. Cool.
Yep.
Now everybody knows that in your phone lies the truth. Yep. And so if you're on another piece of property, it's because you purposely have made the decision to be on that piece of property.
Yeah. Right. 100%.
Yep. But yeah, man, those out-of-state hunts where you just don't know what to expect, dude, those are the best, man.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, just especially just new land. I mean, you're just out 100%. There. Yeah.
What's on your bucket list, man? Like, what do you got? What do you want to, what do you have another state that you have in mind or another species that you have in mind that you want to kind of attack here pretty soon?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to get back elk hunting at some point. But yeah, for me, it's definitely an out of state hunt, you know, potentially Iowa, also potentially Missouri. My sister and brother-in-law live down there, not hunters. But they have about 100 acres down there that is decent hunting. And so like definitely on my bucket list for me is this year, it's just, you know, again, if I see a 3-year-old 110 or even a 2-year-old 110, like, you know, for me, that's awesome. You know, take that. Definitely would love to get out of state. And then I kind of like you talked about, you know, another bucket list for me is getting my daughter out
100%
hunting with me. Like to me, that would be just as exciting as shooting a monster. So, you know, definitely that, but yeah, look forward to, I don't know, maybe Illinois. You know, I got a buddy who goes down there a lot, asked me to go a lot. And I, you know, hopefully one of these weekends I can just kind of get the green light to jump in with him, use his pins and tell him, you know, just go hang down there somewhere and see what happens. So, yeah, it's kind of just getting to new areas, you know, even if it's just scouting and just, you know, getting out there and exploring new territory is that's exciting for me.
Exactly. Exactly. You turkey hunt at all?
A little bit. Yep. Here and there. Yep. I'm not very good. I'm really bad at turkey hunting. I can't call. It's kind of funny. When I first started at, was at Huntwise, we were out doing a shoot, and one of the video guy, he actually came from Onyx. And so we're like out there. I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm terrible at turkey calling. I can't do it. It's like, I'm sitting there trying to call. He's like, this is awful. He's like, let me just call for you. I'll make it sound like your call's like perfect. Cause I can't call. So, when I turkey hunt, you know, I have other people kind of calling in for me, but, yeah, don't do a lot. I do a lot of fishing too. So like I, you know, especially in the spring, dude, I'm out, you know, do a lot of trout and bluegill fishing. My wife loves bluegill fishing. So, you know, that's a great way to get outside without having to burn a day by myself. So
yeah,
it's also balancing the time fishing too with kind of a spring turkey hunting. So
yeah, my buddy Bob Polanek up in northern Michigan, that dude is like a steelhead master.
Oh,
and
steelhead,
dude, I didn't know like that big a fish lived in that small of creeks up there.
It is insane.
It's crazy.
Yeah. The steelhead are big, right? Yeah. Like they get huge and they're in the PM, they're in these rivers where you're not even waist deep. Mm-hmm. And what's crazy about it is the salmon run. So like actually, September 5th, I actually have a King salmon trip planned in the morning. I have a wedding at night, but I'm going to go up north super early, try to get some early kings in. Mm-hmm. But dude, you'll go to these rivers that are like, you know, you can almost jump across them, you know, not quite that, but like you're standing in like barely waist deep water, and that's the whole thing. And you got, I mean, you have like these massive kings in there spawning. It's like, how did he even get here? You know, right. there's times where you can't get a kayak or a drift boat through, like you got to port it around down logs, and then you just got these, you know, 30 inch, 20 plus pound fish swimming through there.
Right.
That, and like, especially those kings, you know, steelhead are fun to fight. Like, don't get me wrong, I'll fight them all day. And, you know, they run, but dude, you get into a king, they fight you back. It's not like they're not running, like they're shaking their head, like they're coming at you. And it's just, it's wild. It's a wild fight in those little rivers.
Yeah. And man, that's a lot of the Midwestern, the Midwestern, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, all up through the, you know, the Midwest up into the Northeast, the wildlife in these states. And I think what happens is a lot of people they pigeonhole themselves into a specific species. Mm-hmm. And they go, I am a deer hunter. Well, I like bow hunting for whitetails a lot, but I also like hunting turkeys. Mm-hmm. Don't tell anybody I said that, because I bitch about them too. Right. But Dude, if I wanted to go pheasant hunting, I could go pheasant hunting. If I wanted to fish for catfish, bass, smallmouth, panfish, whatever, I could go do that. I could trap if I wanted to. You know, I could drive mm-hmm. up into to northeast Iowa and western Wisconsin. I could go fly fishing for anything. It's like within a 2-hour drive of most of the Midwest, you can hunt a crazy amount of things and fish for mm-hmm. a crazy amount of things. My bucket list, though, is a muskie. I've never caught a muskie. I want to catch a muskie.
Yeah, dude. They got them over here in Michigan. Quite a few. I mean, obviously, they have them over there in Minnesota a lot. I would love to also. I never have. I've never caught. I've caught some monster pike. Those are awesome. But, yeah, definitely muskie is on my bucket list. Is on my bucket list, too. So, like, yeah. I don't know. I got to get out there for that.
Yeah. So, working in the hunting space, what's it like jockeying for PTO during the hunting season? Is it tough?
Tricky. It is tricky. Yeah. It is tricky because, you know, obviously it's peak season, you know, everybody's buying stuff. We got to keep up on, you know, demand, what we're selling, what we have in inventory, stuff like that. So you kind of got to be selective. I'm putting in advance. I'm like, hey, man, like here are these days, like I need them. I kind of need these off. But you know, I think I, you know, especially early bow season, like I mentioned my farm, like for some reason or another, it's just like way better early October, kind of like mid October, late October, that like the bucks kind of just seem to leave that area. I don't know why. I haven't been able to explain why, but like, especially like early October, like, definitely planning, you know, when the sun, you know, you have the sun doesn't come out, you know, till or still comes out early. So you have more time before kind of work starts. So I'm definitely trying to plan to get like some early morning hunts in, you know, to come in a little bit later, unless I shoot one that's like, hey, you know, got to cancel all these meetings. But it is tricky. It is tricky.
I got a buddy who works for a big box retailer and everybody there wants to take vacation at the same time, right? So some years he's like, because he has seniority, he's able to pick, but there's other people there that he has to jockey with. And he's like, dude, I drew, you know, this week of November, or I drew the second week of November, or I drew whatever. And most guys would love to use all their PTO and take off that many days, but he's like, I got to do this, then I got to come back for a day, then I got to go, then I can come, you know, go hunt again and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll see what I can get approved, and then I don't know, hopefully just, you know, sneak out some early mornings, or I don't know, maybe take the computer on the truck ride to my hunting spot and work until the day's done, and then sneak out to the stand. I don't know.
Have you ever done a meeting in the tree stand?
No. I've definitely answered text messages, like Teams calls in the tree stand plenty of times. I have taken a meeting like sitting in my truck, you know, camera off, just like full camo, like, this is great. Go up through it and boom, it's over. Close it out there. It gets risky because it's like, oh man, you know, I'm just waiting for, you know, my manager or somebody to call me like, hey, can you jump on this quick? It's like, oh no, I can't actually, I'm sitting in tree stand. But most people here, you know, I mean, they, it's not like they're not doing the same thing also. So, you know, it's,
I'll tell you this. I've had a day where I was on a giant and there was an issue with one of our platforms on the network here. And this may have been 4 years ago or something like that. And I did not want to get in there late. So I brought my laptop and did a mobile hotspot with my phone. And I was, you know, scrunched down on this lone wolf assault, typing on my laptop like this, like popping my head up, making sure nothing was coming through and fixing the problem, and then put the laptop back in my bag. But I've only had to do that time, knock on wood.
Yeah, it's cool. But at the same time, it's like, it kind of just takes you away from hunting. Like, it's good because you're out there, you still have a chance. But like, to me, it's like, there's just so much going on. It's harder to enjoy it until like you finally just shut it down, and then you're, you know, you can kind of put it away. Then it opens up.
Absolutely. Troy, man, great conversation today. Good old fashioned BS session to get us all fired up for episode 1000 and the upcoming hunting season, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you when we talk to you, man. Good luck this season.
Sounds good, brother. I appreciate you having me on, and good luck on your 1000th episode. Definitely pumped for that.
Thanks, man.
So,
you're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.